Now, everyone is interested in prophecy, and everyone is interested in what's going on in the world and why things are happening the way that they are. And so we will look at some of the prophecies, and then we will make some estimations which don't count as dogma. But nevertheless, we need to think and put things together so that we can come to a better understanding as we move along. Now let's come back here to the book of Genesis, and we're going to look at Ishmael and Esau again. Genesis 16. Now, you know, the solution to being childless in Sarah's mind was for Abraham to take Hagar, her handmaid. And this is very instructive for many different reasons, because it shows that sometimes when we sin against God, or we attempt to, and so everyone who wants to fulfill a prophecy by being a prophet, and by the way, I'll mention again, there's one man supposedly in Jerusalem saying that he is one of the two witnesses, the fellow we talked about before, Ron Wineland. And if he is, then let him call down a plague somewhere in the world and know that God answered his prayer, and let him automatically, magically make a temple appear, and then we will believe that he's one of the two witnesses. But there's always a penalty for trying to work out the promises of God our own way. And in this case, the promise given to Abraham was not only a promise, but also a prophecy. So Sarah wanted to nudge things along and work things out, so she said, well, here, take Hagar, my handmaid. So he did, went into her, and immediately, let's pick it up here in verse 4 of Genesis 16, he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when Hagar saw she had conceived, she looked upon her mistress with contempt. So there's always that jealousy that goes on because of that. And Sarah said to Abraham, my wrong be upon you. Well, thank you. I have given my handmaid into your bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and you. So we can ask the question, I wonder what the world would have been like if he hadn't went into Hagar. Just like we have the sermon on what the world would have been like if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned. What would the world have been like if Abraham would have said, no, 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 no. If I can't have Eliezer as my heir, I'm not going to do this. So, verse 6. But Abram said to Sarai, that was her name before it was changed to Sarah, behold, your handmaid is in your hand, do to her as it pleases you. And Sarah dealt harshly with her, because she probably had a guilt complex doing it. See? So now she was going to get rid of the problem by being harsh. And she fled from her presence, that is the handmaid. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fount of water in the wilderness, by the fountain on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's handmaid, where did you come from, and where will you go? And she said, I fled from the presence of my mistress Sarai. And the angel said to her, return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hand. And the angel of the Lord said to her, I will multiply your seed exceedingly, so that they shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel said to her, behold, you are with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. And he shall be a wild man, his hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall live in the presence of all of his brothers. And the Arabs have not migrated around the world like the children of Israel had, except the few that immigrate to different countries. Now, then we have another situation where he was finally kicked out. Let's come to chapter 21. After Isaac was weaned, verse 9, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, who had borne to Abraham, whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. So there was hatred from day one between the women, between the two sons, and grievous heartache for Abraham. And she said to Abraham, cast out the handmaiden, the maidservant and her son, for the son of the maidservant shall not be heir with my son Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. So when we look back and we think of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, let's not look back with stars in our eyes and perfection. Because their sins and problems we're still dealing with today. And we'll see in just a minute. Verse 12, and God said to Abraham, let it not be grievous in your sight because of the boy and because of your maidservant. In all that Sarah has said to you, hearken to her words, for in Isaac shall your seed be called. And also I will make a nation of the son of the maidservant, because he is your seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, took bread and skin of water, gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and gave her the boy, and sent her away, and she departed and wandered into the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water in the skin was gone, and she placed the boy under the shrubs, and she went and sat down across from him a good way off, about a bow shot, for she said, let me not see the death of my boy. And she sat across from him and lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of the Lord called to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Rise up, lift up the boy, hold him in your hands, for I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the wineskin with, or not the wineskin, but the skin with water, and gave a drink to the boy. And God was with the boy. He grew up, lived in the wilderness, and became an archer. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him out of Egypt. So when you read these verses, they are not all just in immediate sequence of time, because when he was kicked out, he was 13. Well, obviously, living in the wilderness of Paran, how long did he do that? Probably to 16, 18, maybe 19, maybe 20. So there's a period of time before the mother took a wife for him out of the land of Egypt. So we need to keep that in mind. So let's keep the Ishmaelites in mind here. And let's come over here to Esau, because I want to put this together just a little differently than I had in the past. Okay? Genesis 25 and verse 20. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, and the sister of Laban the Syrian. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord heard him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the son struggled together with her, and she said, if it is well, why am I this way? So there was a battle from conception. Think of that. Inbred hatred. So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Now let's just stop here and analyze this for what it is. Because people always want to know, where did the different nations come from? Well, God can create nations from the same mother and father, create different nations in from them at any time he desires. So we can take that all the way back to Adam and Eve. And people ask the question, well, where did the races come from? Well, God created them within the inheritance that he gave to Adam and to Eve. And they had 56 children. And at that time, God determined that they would have to marry their brothers and sisters, and that was not against the law of God at that time because of the wide expanse of the gene pool that God put within Adam and Eve. When we come to this side of the flood, we know that the three major, the white, the brown, and the, not the brown, the yellow, and the black, came from Shem, the white, Japheth, the yellow, and then there are some whites from Japheth too, and then from Ham came some of the Indian races and the blacks. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us how they all passed through the flood. Now, there are some traditions which may be true or may not be true, but the point is, God made all people. There are some people who think that the blacks are the seed of Cain as a result of Eve and the serpent copulating. But you cannot have different kinds from an animal to a human being produce another human being. It has to be human to human. So that's not true, and people believe that to this day. And so what we need to do is this. Just understand, God at any time with any mother and father can create any race he desires by the very fact that he is God. So here we have Rebekah and Isaac. And now look at the two sons that were born. See? Two nations are in your womb, and two kinds of people shall be separated from your belly. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the older shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, twins were in her womb. And the first came out red like a hairy garment all over. Now remember, he was so hairy. So hairy. That when Rebecca connived to get the blessing to Jacob, she had to put hairy goatskin on the back of his neck and on the top of his hands. So if you've ever seen in one of these National Geographic things, people covered with hair all over. I remember seeing one had a part down the middle of his forehead to part the hair back because the hair just all over the body. So that's what Esau was like. They called his name Esau, which means red. Now, the question was asked, how coming from the same mother and father you can have two different sons like this? And I imagine without God telling them about it, it would have been an astonishing surprise for this to happen. And it's probable, or more likely, that he had very red hair. Now, that whole gene pool had the mixture of the Canaanites and the Egyptians in it later, and so today we don't have the fiery red hair that probably Esau was. But nevertheless, the long and the short is this. God can create a nation of people that are different from parents that are different than them at any time he decides. So that's why we have the variation in people today. Also, that which people look at and think is evolution, remember, God is creator and he can create even in the animals variations that he desires at any time, because he says, all the beasts of the earth are mine. So God is actively working in these things, and it's not natural selection per se, though there is natural selection, but where you see some of these birds that are of the same species, but there are great distinctions, say, in the length of the bill and things like this, well, I think God just created them. Right in the eggs, after all. Who made the eggs? Who made the bird's genes and chromosomes? God did. Verse 26 now, Genesis 25. And after that, his brother came out and took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Now, see, he started praying when she was 40 years old. The prayer was not answered for another 20 years. So we need to look sometimes at the expanse of time between some of these verses and understand that this is a summary. Verse 27, the boys grew. Esau was a skilled hunter, a man of the field. Jacob was a quiet man, living in tents, a merchant. Jacob loved Esau because he ate his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob, and so forth. And then you have the sale of the birthright. All right. Now, let's come over here and see the blessing that was, the lack of blessing that was given to Esau. No, let's look at both of them, because it would have gone to Jacob anyway. And sometimes, in order to bring out the true nature of people, God let some human subversion come in, like with Rebekah and Jacob. You know, well, you need to get the blessing, so, you know, just like her mother-in-law. You know, you need to have children, so here's Hagar. You need to have the blessing because, you know, we don't want to give the blessing to this hairy firstborn here. You know, we want to give it to you. But the prophecy was that it would go to the younger. So they could have settled the issue differently by looking to God to provide another means. Another example of taking into your hands to fulfill the promises of God. And the reason I bring this out, because there are a lot of people that are trying to fulfill prophecies and promises of God today and get all lifted up in vanity and conceit and cause a lot of difficulties within the churches of God and people and other churches. You know, they found another Mormon sect, a polygamist sect down somewhere, Arizona, New Mexico. And the guy says, I am the Messiah. All right, rule the world. There's another black guy down so we have a white guy saying he's the Messiah. We have a black guy saying he's the Messiah. And he was arrested, put in jail, because he was ordering the killing of his enemies. So, you know, if God is going to raise up someone to do something, let God raise him up and do it when it's his time. Don't come and rush God and say, I am the one. Or, you know, stop and think. Weren't we in a church where father and son were the two witnesses? Uh-oh, one died. Now what's going to happen? Uh-oh, later the other one died. They weren't the two witnesses. So here we have the same problem here. So Jacob came in, did as his mother did, you know, so the excuse could be to God, well, God, I did it because my mama said so. So anyway, brought him in with the venison that the mother cooked. Verse 18, Genesis 27, he came to his father and said, My father, and he said, Here I am. Who are you, my son? And Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you ask. Arise, I pray you, sit and eat my venison, that your soul may bless me. And Isaac said to his... This after Esau already sold the birthright. Now remember, Esau already sold it. So they could have had a family council and ended the matter by Esau saying, I sold it to him. Didn't have to go through all of this. But nevertheless, they went through it, and there's a lesson for us in it. And Isaac said to his son, and of course he was nearly blind at this time, How is it that you found it so quickly, my son? And he said, Because the Lord your God brought it to me. Well, you see, what do you have? The typical thing of what? One lie leads to another lie, and lies are always to do good. Right? So you have all of these elements in there. And Isaac said to Jacob, Come near, I pray you, so that I may feel you, my son, whether you are truly my son Esau or not. So Jacob went near Esau, his father, and he felt him and said, The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he was wearing all the smoke-filled and outdoor clothes that Esau had. And he did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like his brother's Esau hands, and he blessed him. And he said, Are you truly my son Esau? He said, I am. And he said, Bring it to me, and I will eat my son's venison so that my soul may bless you. And he brought it near to him, and he ate. And he brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said to him, Come near now and kiss me, my son. So here he's testing him all this time, you see. He suspected some kind of hanky-panky going on, and he probably knew the connivings and thinkings of his wife Rebecca anyway. Well, after Isaac had the wine, he didn't think of asking for both of them together. Okay, so anyway. He came, at verse 27, he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, See, I smell the smell of my son as is the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. May God give him the dew of heaven. Now, this is an official blessing which can only be given one time. Can't be given out twice, just once. And the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine, and let people serve you, and let nations bow down to you, be lord over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed is everyone that curses you, and blessed be he that blesses you. And it came to pass that soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was scarcely gone from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from hunting, and he also made a dish of savory meat, brought it to his father, said to his father, Let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, so that your soul may bless me. So apparently Esau figured that if he sold the birthright to Jacob, that wouldn't make any difference, because he'd still get the blessing of the birthright. So here he comes in, thinking he's going to get it. And his father Isaac said to him, Who are you? And he said to him, I'm your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled greatly and said, Who then was the one who has hunted deer and brought it in to me, and I have eaten it all before you came and have blessed him? Yea, he shall be blessed. Because that was a blessing couldn't take back, couldn't give it to anyone else. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceedingly bitter cry and said to his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, Your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing. And Esau said, "Is he not rightly called Jacob, for he has supplanted me these two times? He took away my birthright, and behold, he has taken away my blessing." And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" And Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him your lord. And all his brethren I have given him for servants. And with grain and wine I have sustained him. And what shall I do now to you, my son?" And Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me even also, my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, your dwelling shall be far from the fatness of the earth, far from the dew of heaven above, and you shall live by your sword, and you shall serve your brother, and it shall come to pass that when you shall have the dominion, you shall break his yoke from off your neck." Now that's a prophecy that we are undoubtedly looking at in the process today of being fulfilled. Let's read on here. "And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, 'The days of mourning for my father are at hand, and I will kill my brother Jacob.'" So then you know the rest of the story. Okay. Now, let's come to Psalm 83. Let's read something very interesting here, and maybe this will help make sense. Psalm 83. Maybe this will help make sense as to what is going on. Now, we can't know exactly all of these things for sure, but based on those prophecies and looking at the way things are going in the world, when we read Psalm 83, are we going to see that these prophecies are taking place right before our very eyes? Now, I want you to think of all the Middle Eastern nations and their great hatred for the West. So it's not surprising that they have a religion that fits their nature. So let's pick it up here, verse 1, Psalm 83. "Keep not silent, O God, do not be silent, and do not be quiet, O God. For lo, your enemies are in an uproar." And if that doesn't describe what's going on in the Middle East, I don't know what does. "And those who hate you have lifted up their head, and they hate the God that the Western world worships, which they think are worshiping. They hate the true God, because they have Allah as their God. But the truth is, the Western nations are not worshiping the true God in truth. They're worshiping him in the way that they want to, which is filled with a lot of human ideas and false doctrines and things. But nevertheless, those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people, and they plot against your hidden ones." Now, crafty counsel, isn't that interesting? Okay. Or you could translate this cunning counsel. "They have said, 'Come, let us cut them off from being a nation.'" What is the goal of Islam?
Destroy us.
Destroy Western civilization, and Western civilization are basically from the sons of Jacob. But especially America and Britain. "So that the name Israel may be remembered no more." And so what do they start out with? They start out with the Jews who are in Palestine. "I refuse to call it the Holy Land. It's anything but holy today. And I refuse to call it Israel because the name Israel was never upon the house of Judah." Now, if you want to call it the house of Judah, that's fine. But I will call it Palestine. Now, so thereafter, all Israel and the Jews, for with one heart they have plotted together, they have made a covenant against you. Tabernacles of Edom, which is Esau. Notice the two leaders and the Ishmaelites. Well, those are all, that includes a lot of people today. And the most fanatical, those who are the Shiites and Hezbollah, and those of Hamas in the Gaza Strip, they are the most fanatical, insane, hateful. They are trained from the time that they take their first breath in hatred and viciousness, even at the cost of their own lives. They think nothing of going out and being killed to fulfill to their false god Allah to destroy any Western person. Now, we saw last night on the news, and this kind of brought it to mind. God said that of the children of Israel, they would be a blessing to the world, and we have been. Whenever there are troubles and difficulties, God raises up Israel in a war to end evil. World War I, World War II, you know, various places in the world. Also, raised up Israel, and they give to help people in distress and trouble like no other peoples in the history of the world. And even though we have economic problems, we are giving to help the people just right like right now over in Myanmar, which is Burma, because those people have dictators over them, just like when the tsunami came several years ago in Indonesia, in that area. When the Americans went in there, a lot of the people stopped their hatred toward Americans because they were so kind and generous in helping them out. That's all a part of Israel being a blessing to the world, as God has promised. But not the Ishmaelites, not the Edomites, not these nations in the Middle East. And this really was brought out on the news last night. I saw it. I don't know if you saw it. They're talking about the food relief now going into Burma and the United Nations Emergency Food Relief Program. And the Americans this year put in $378 million. Britain put in, I think, 100 and some million. Some other countries put in a little less. One Arab country put in, and I think it was United Arab Emirates, $50,000, and Saudi Arabia, the home of the Ishmaelites, put in nothing. And I think that reflects the nature of the hatred of the people, and I think that also shows they don't care anything about the rest of the people in the world, because if they can't come and slaughter them for Allah and by the force of iron make other people accept Islam, they just as soon let them die. They don't care about them. Here they're sitting on the trillions of dollars, and they won't put out a dime to help anyone. Now, let's look at it this way. All right? Ishmael, Moab, the Hagarites, Gibeah, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, that's basically those in the Gaza Strip today, and the people of Tyre, those are those up in Lebanon today, and Assyria, now that's Assyria still there on the east side of Turkey. That's not the necessarily just the Germans today, could be, have joined with them. They've helped the children of Lot, Selah. Now, remember the prophecy where that eventually Esau would get the yoke of Jacob off his neck. Now, could it be? So, where's my cowbell? Donna had it. There it is. Okay. because later we're going to cover some things on some criticisms concerning the events leading up to Pentecost and the Pentecost resurrection. So could it be that in the midst of the economic problems that we're having here in America as Israelites today, and yes, because of our sins we are going down, that is true, and part of the judgment of God against us in the end time is that the Edomites, Esau, and Ishmael are going to come out from underneath the yoke of Jacob. Could it be that what we are seeing, because when you look at the price of oil, and where does most of the oil in the world come from? Right from these nations I just read you here. And I think they're absolute insane lack of giving anything to help people in distress reveals the cunning, crafty counsel that they may have taken. So I rang the bell because I wasn't there. I don't know their hearts. I can't read their minds. But we can look at what is happening. And other people have supposed this too. Do you suppose that they're driving up the price of oil higher, 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 higher to break us so that we must pull out of the Middle East? Wouldn't that be a great scheme to do? You don't have to fire a shot. You don't have to make a bomb. Now remember, all of these, with the exception of Turkey, hardly any of them have an army worth spitting at. So how do you fight someone who is the superpower of the world? You make them go broke. So you take counsel together and you say, oh, we will not produce any more oil while their demand is going up and up and up and up. And I think that they're responsible in the bidding of the price war to get oil up. Now, is it going to lead to a forced pullout in the Middle East? And maybe that's why they're endorsing Barack Hussein Obama. Could be. Remember, I rang my cowbell. So let's just watch. I'm not trying to be a prophet, but I'm trying to analyze prophecy as in the Bible and the events of today and look at the players of old and the players of today. Several questions were asked. Who discovered the oil for Saudi Arabia? Oh, the Israelites. Who drilled it? The Israelites. Who made the equipment to do it? The Israelites. Okay? And various schemers in the international high level of super billionaires are running and controlling this whole thing, of which the majority of the oil-producing leaders fit that bill. See? Now, Israel is blinded from their own sins toward God. And the enemies within, and when you hear the radio program that I did with Gianni Hayes, she tried to get me to name some of the top ones of, like, the Committee of 300 and so forth. But the Committee of 300 run the world. Nothing is done without them knowing it. Period. And there have been enemies within America that have stopped the drilling of oil for so-called ecological reasons, but more so for political reasons, by working with other powers in the world to take down America, because America is hated by more than just the ones we read of here. And they want to take over so they can exploit these things themselves later. Now, hold on here and let's come back to Deuteronomy, the 8th chapter. When you understand that God blessed this nation with a lot of resources. Now, what you need to do is Deuteronomy 8. Now, when we come to Deuteronomy 8, let's also, after we're done reading this, we'll read the blessings that went to Joseph. And why we have such a beautiful country here. Every time someone talks about the greatness of America, and we can include Canada and Australia and, you know, Northwestern Europe, they always say that this is the most blessed country that of God that has ever been in the entire world. So there are enemies that God raises up when the nation sins. Because, you see, remember when we went back and began to read about the covenant that God established with the children of Israel at Mount Sinai? Said, you'll be a kingdom of priests, a nation of priests for me. Because Israel was to take the word of God and God's way to the whole world, so that the nations of the world would not be like they are. But we didn't do it. And we have turned our back on God. But let's look at some of the resources here and ask the question, who in their right mind would not drill for oil that's here, except they have some kooky eco freak and there are organizations that have stopped it because they are really front agents to destroy America, and God has allowed it because America has turned its back on God. Not only allowed it, caused it. Now we'll see, when people turn their back on God, God causes these things to happen. Let's go to the next track, please.